Hello and welcome back to We the People, your favorite weekly Nintendo podcast. We're here again, the Cotrello Brothers, to deliver a little bit of commentary on what's going on with Nintendo. It's not as heavy a week as last week. The Twitter sphere did not shatter from the blocky man from Minecraft entering Super Smash Bros., but we'll see what we can do for you this week. Matthew, how you doing?
Doing fine. I'm ready to shine.
Yeah, so last we left off, we recorded the podcast as we normally do, either late Thursday or early Friday, so we didn't have the chance to see the Mr. Sakurai Presents Steve and Alex presentation, but now we have, and you know, that's a video you can, of course, check out on Nintendo's YouTube channel. It's 45 minutes of a deep dive of, you know, a bunch of random facts about how Sakurai works and how this deal was struck, how they plan to implement it into the game, and, of course, how Steve works, with a couple of reveals toward the end of the trailer for some Mii costumes that definitely shake up the speculation game on who's coming in the DLC pass. But Matthew, what do you think about Steve? Did this change your opinion of him? Are you more excited, less excited? Tell me what's up.
I don't know if I'm still, I would say, probably the same. I'm a little indifferent on it. Like, I think it's cool that we got him as opposed to a certain type of character, like a anime sword-wielding character, but still not my preferred choice. Seeing this, though, I would say it makes me a little less excited from the competitive standpoint, because I feel like Steve has a lot of jank, so to speak, or a lot of cheese. a lot of things that just seem counterintuitive to the competitive construct of Smash. And, you know, me being a Donkey Kong main ever since Smash 64, there's a lot of stuff that Steve does that seems like it's just going to take advantage of his bad recovery, and really any character that doesn't have a great recovery. And so there's a lot of stuff that he brings to the table from a competitive standpoint that seems like it'll be really annoying to deal with. And that's kind of one thing in Smash Ultimate that I've slowly lost love for over time with, is the competitive aspect and how many characters rely on gimmicks. And, you know, there's a phrase for certain characters called, you know, zoners, which to me in a fighting game, that just sounds so anti-fighting game. But, you know, Steve seems like he has a little bit of that. Like, even just being able to build blocks to shield you from the edge or dump molten lava over the edge, you know, stuff like that, that just seems really broken towards any character that has a horizontal recovery. So I'm not excited for it in that standpoint, but he seems like a really unique character that brings really interesting, I wouldn't say gameplay concepts, but just it's just so different from any character we've ever had in the past. And so from that standpoint, I appreciate it, and it's interesting, but overall, I'm not looking forward to having to fight Steve.
Yeah, and there's always that awkward first week that the character's live where you're literally only going to be fighting Steve. But if you can figure out, if you've got a character that you want to get into Elite who matches up well against the DLC character, bring him out, man. It's always a fun time. Oh, goodness. I have a totally different takeaway from it. I'm excited now. I still think the art style does not fit very well, and I think that they could have done a little bit more to make Steve blend in. And I know there's characters like Mr. Game & Watch that look different, but Mr. Game & Watch is so different, being just two-dimensional, that I feel like that's kind of how it works, whereas Steve is just, you know, he looks like a Smash 64 character inside of this one, and they just... Most characters, there's some type of liberty taken with how they appear in the game, and with Steve, it was just like basically like a copy and paste thing, which I imagine was part of the terms of the agreement. Minecraft is trying to maintain a certain sense of purity, because everything they do that's outside of the main game doesn't seem to catch on quite as well as I would imagine they'd like. You know, you look at a lot of their other projects, and it's still quite obvious that the main Minecraft is really just the breadwinner here. It's incredibly interesting that they reworked every single stage in the game to make this block mechanic work, and just that gives you a picture of how important this deal is. In there's some Mojang employees that have I think the business developer at Mojang had led to speculation that this has been a deal that they've been working on for like 5 years, which I can believe. I mean, you know, this is Minecraft is a gigantic property owned by a even more gigantic corporation. Like, these things take time, and Mojang specifically is very, very picky about how Minecraft is represented. Even if you do like YouTube videos, which is how the game got famous, you've got to, like, you know, kind of live within certain bounds, and they have a bunch of rules for that. So it's not surprising that they have a lot of those same rules inside of Smash. But the moveset looks cool. I like the mining mechanic. I think that I can't understand whether this character will be good or bad, because while there's all these kooky mechanics that are specific to him and will be hard to match up against if you're not used to it, also his basic like attacks don't seem all that great. I think he's just going to get outranged by a certain class of characters, but I think, like most new characters, he's going to be very, very gimmicky, very different from everyone else, and that's so it's just going to be very matchup based as far as who's going to win out in these one-on-one battles that play out online. And I definitely feel you on that whole aspect. It's the double-edged sword of Smash Ultimate, where I love that every character is unique. That Little Mac is just purely a ground character. I love that they actually give Ryu and Ken and Terry fighter inputs from their games. I love that there's this building mechanic. I love the attack select of the Dragon Quest character. I love all that. Also, the game that it creates from a competitive standpoint is just very, 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 very matchup heavy. And every character has their own little weird gimmick that you have to learn. And so I find myself going online and I'm just like trying to squeeze out that final battle that will get me into Elite Smash. And then all of a sudden I'll run into someone who I've just never fought before, like Rosalina. And she just functions differently from everybody else. And she's got her own little gimmicks. And I lose. And then you fight someone like Steve or Pac-Man or like every Mega Man. They're all just so different from each other. And if you don't know the matchup, then you're going to get roasted. And that's definitely going to happen here. But it's a weird thing, because like I don't think I would trade it for more Melee-like movesets, because I do enjoy how wacky and crazy everything gets, but I do understand that there's sort of give and take there.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things. I mean, Smash Ultimate, I think, you know, at this point, it shouldn't worry about catering to being a great competitive fighting game, because I don't think it's ever been tailored to be that. And just the sheer amount of or number of characters that are included in this game just naturally is going to make it non-competitive, because there's just so many characters and so many different playstyles that there's certain characters that are just not well equipped enough to compete with other characters. Like, you know, I was telling you, because obviously, you know, I mean, DK, it's like, you know, DK just gets, you know, like if you try to fight a character like Duck Hunt, for example, or Samus, or there's certain characters that he's just not designed to be able to compete well against, or like Pikachu, for example. But, you know, that's just kind of the game in general. So I don't think they should really have or be conscious of that anyway. But it's just, you know, for me, Steve, the thing that I'm not really looking forward to is he seems kind of like you said, that he's got a lot of issues that better characters will be able to exploit. But my issue with a lot of characters they add is they'll add all these average characters that really beat up on the low tiers, but that can't compete with the top tiers whatsoever. And that's what I always find kind of annoying, because it seems like these characters are just designed to rub it in the face of low tiers even more, that like, hey, you're a low tier character and you can't do anything about the, you know, gimmicky play style that I have. You kind of just have to accept it and be frustrated over it. And meanwhile, those characters that get added, you know, when you try to pit them up against top tier characters, they just can't compete whatsoever. It's almost like they're designed with flaws enough in mind when it comes to playing bad characters, but it, you know, they're designed almost to be able to abuse or take advantage of bad characters.
Yeah, I think what's happening there is just a lack of imagination with some other movesets. And there's only a certain amount of characters that they kind of went back and did some editing on. I mean, they changed Link's look, but he's the same character minus the bomb. The bomb is a huge part of his new gameplay, but, you know, other characters didn't get anything. They're just exactly like they were in whichever game. And the earlier they were, the more likely that they didn't get any sense of redesign. And so characters like Donkey Kong really suffer from that, where they don't have those like interesting tools to be able to deal with a lot of those characters in. That's I think just what naturally what happens, which is why I would hope that the next Smash game would really focus on revitalizing a lot of the old cast, which they definitely tried to do here. And I think in a lot of cases they did a good job. Like, the goal I think was to make Ness good. Maybe they went a little too hard on that one, but they made Ness good. They made Pikachu like way too good. But I like the different direction of his moveset. It's a cooler moveset. The way that they represent him here, having a little bit of difference with how Link works in this game as opposed to the other ones is cool. They made young Link good, which he wasn't all that great in Melee. So they definitely did some of that, but I would hope that they would focus on that in the next Smash game to bring a lot of those other characters up to speed, because in Brawl, it was enough of a gimmick to just, like, you know, toss a banana out of your pocket. Like, that was the Diddy gimmick. But, you know, a gimmick in this for, like, you know, characters that come these days is like, oh, hey, I can I turn into an invincible monster when I take 60 damage, like Choker, or I can destroy you in one hit, just randomly with Dragon Quest, or I can manipulate the world around me with Minecraft. It's getting kind of crazy, and they don't give that love to some of the other characters that are just kind of like wallowing in the lower tiers. You know, like poor Kirby. Like, he's just there. Nothing really special about him.
Well, that's what I just don't really understand. There's a lot of characters that they clearly have flawed designs or designs that need to be updated, and it's just weird. With every addition that's added to Smash now, they almost have to bring some gimmick or unique element to the table that's never been done before. But then you have all these designs of older characters, you know, that just seem so outdated, and that's why they get exploited in so many different matchups. And I wish that was something they were mindful of, but like I said, at this point I don't think they're looking at it as like a competitive game. It really makes for a very bad competitive game, and I don't mean in the sense that playing competitively isn't fun. It's just that it's extremely flawed and unrealistic to get a good competitive experience out of that, because there's just you know, so many things that go against what you would expect in a competitive fighting game. And that's why most fighting games don't have a huge selection of characters, because the more characters and different play styles and gimmicks that you include, it just gets to a point where certain characters just can't compete against other characters and vice versa. So
yeah, although I do like that they spend a lot of time to try and make sure that these characters can function in that context, and I really appreciate that. I mean, as someone who's interested in the game competitively, who has a history of doing it, I don't really compete in tournaments anymore, obviously. But I'd like to hit a couple of ultimate local tournaments before the game is eventually sunsetted. And, you know, this stuff, adding the new characters keeps it fresh. It gives, you know, gives you a reason to revisit those tournaments. And I appreciate the effort that they put into it. But yeah, I mean, it's near impossible to balance a game with this many characters. I mean, the benefit is that the top tier in this game is a little bit wider than it was in Smash 4, just by proxy of having more characters. And and so, you know, there's some good that comes from that, but and they can't ever really commit in either direction, because, you know, you don't want to lose the competitive people, because those are the people who keep marketing your game 3 years later, posting clips and stuff to Twitter and whatnot, and you don't want to alienate the casual audience either. And so that's why, you know, I think King K. Rool is like one of the biggest the biggest victims of that that dual mentality, because as a casual character, he's like high tier or maybe even broken. I remember when he first came out, I was under the impression during our first few rounds that he was really good, and a lot of people online thought he was too good. He even got nerfed as part of the first patch, and that's really just like in the casual play. I mean, now that'd be a joke to see a K Rool, you know, even make it to top eights. I don't even think that's ever happened in a major tournament, and so there's, you know, a little give and take there. But as someone who's like, you know, wants to play a competitive game casually, it's hidden that spot, because I can't play games like Street Fighter, because it would just take, you know, a little too much out of me to learn how to play it. And I mean, I think the closest parallel would be like something like Dragon Ball FighterZ, but even that, the inputs are slightly too needy for me to want to like spend the time to learn the game. And then there's like a lot of matchup stuff that you need to learn there. But I'm kind of surprised that Ultimate hasn't followed that direction of having those squad battles become more of a norm, where you pick three different characters, because it would kind of like level out the whole matchup angle of it. And I wonder if the next Smash game is going to make that more of a focus, where you're switching out characters in between matches, and not just when you lose a stock, but you would be able to like switch on command and create like a little bit of a Marvel versus Capcom type of thing there.
Yeah, I mean, I think they might emphasize it more in the future, but I don't think it'll ever become a mainstay type of deal, because I just think, you know, Smash is what it is at this point, and we're five entries into the series, and the last thing you want to do is force people to play under different terms and conditions than they're used to playing and probably want to play under. And because of that, I think you would just alienate a lot of people if you started trying to essentially create that type of experience. So I mean, and that's kind of the thing with Smash as a series. I mean, it's the mechanics don't really change from game to game too much. You know, I mean, that's why, you know, we were talking about like, or, you know, just playing DK. It's like DK hasn't changed since Brawl. You know, he's essentially been the same character for three straight games now. And that's kind of all they really do with the game at this point, is they kind of just move everything over. They might change a couple of things here and there. They usually make a few tweaks to the physics engine and stuff like that. But overall, it, you know, is the same game. And so I think, you know, we've gotten to a point where really the only thing we do look forward to are the new fighters. And I think that's what Sakurai and his team have realized. And that's why they're putting so much into these characters and making them feel unique and different with the DLC add-ons, because that's all Smash has really become about in the non-competitive sphere, is it's just like, what new characters are you adding to the game?
And honestly, it is exciting. And it's no wonder that they're doing this, because they're doubling the MSRP of the game. You know, by the end of this Fighter Pass, I think if you want both, you would need to spend $50 and then another $5 for Piranha Plant. They match that with a couple deluxe Mii costumes, and you've got yourself spending, you know, double on the game. And I definitely think it's worth that price. I mean, the sheer amount of content in Ultimate is just almost... It's like the feeling when you've eaten too much and you're about to vomit. Like, it's disgusting how much stuff they fit into this game. And so I appreciate that from the casual perspective, but is this the first game that DK got a down B in the air?
No, that was
Smash 4, but still, like, you know, took him like a decade and a half to get a down B.
It took him until the fourth game to get his rolling attack from Donkey Kong Country, which just blew my mind.
That too.
And it took four games to get the running attack he uses in literally every game.
Which was so funny, because that would have been such an easier animation for them to implement in the first game, because he has a rolling animation where he curls up into a ball and you just do that. But I don't know, maybe that was the rationale, is maybe it would be too confusing because it looks like he's rolling via the R button in the side, but I don't know. That'll be forever a mystery until we meet Mr.
Well,
Sakurai
Snake
himself.
Had a rolling attack in Brawl, so I doubt it was that.
Well, no, but I'm saying like the very first Smash 64, and then after that, they just didn't really spend, you know, they're like porting the game and then working on it, and they ported. That's usually how they do it. They port all the assets and then they work on top of it. But I wonder for like Smash 64 if that was possibly the reason. But in any case, I'm excited to experience this. We get it dropping sometime next Tuesday. That's here in our Eastern time bubble. We get that around like 7 or 8, maybe 9. Like it's that evening. So we'll probably play it that Wednesday and have some further impressions and videos and all that stuff to do on it. I like these little presentations from Sakurai's abode. I enjoy him as a creator and a personality. I disagree with a lot of his philosophy on game design, which, I mean, sounds kind of funny to say out loud because it's like I haven't never designed a game. But while I, you know, disagree with a lot of the routes he's taken, stances he's taken, I just find him fascinating, and he has a lot of fun with it. He clearly enjoys the work, and not like these little sit downs with him in his crib.
Oh yeah.
So we also got the a bit of a Mii costume update here. I gotta say, this is the first time I'm thinking about buying some of these Mii costumes because that Creeper one has meme potential through the roof. Like absolute meme potential. We've also got the pig. The pig's pretty funny too. And then diamond armor from Minecraft. And then some other Mii costumes came back, which deconfirms a certain number of cast members. So we had the Dragon's Dog or Tower of Drauga character. I don't even know what that is, to be honest. But I think it's a Namco game, and that's out of the running. Bomberman, of course, the double D confirmation. He is an assist trophy and a Mii costume, which is interesting. I think that's the first time they've ever done that, which gives me a little bit of hope of having like a Shovel Knight costume. I mean, it's not what I want, but it's closer to what I want than an assist trophy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean the Mii costumes, the Bomberman one does look really good, and it makes me kind of wish that Bomberman was a character. That was always a character I feel like nobody ever talks about, but like, you know, he is really cool and he does have a pretty lengthy history. I think it's just that Bomberman's not in the limelight anymore, and so it's kind of more of a, I don't want to say forgotten franchise, but just it's not a, I don't know. I feel like it's almost like Mega Man, but just less relevant.
Yeah, which just I'm always just very curious about how these negotiations go down. You know, at first it seemed so strange that Cloud got into Smash 4, and then they announced Final Fantasy VII Remake, and it's like, oh, okay, this markets the character and your biggest game for of the half decade to a very, very, very wide audience. Especially the Nintendo people, where you don't typically publish games. There's other stuff, like you might think that they went with the Castlevania characters for this game with Konami. Maybe Konami was doing that to market the Castlevania brand. They had the Netflix series going on around the same time, you know, in the same window of a few years. You wonder if that's the case. But yeah, there's other weird cases like that where they also have picked characters that aren't relevant to anything at all, like Terry, and you wonder how these conversations go down and how they make these little selections. But I imagine something like that is why Bomberman didn't get in. But you know, I think the reason he's an assist trophy is because they're like, we got to get him in there somehow. You know, if you don't want us to, like, you know, go the full mile with a playable character, he works well as an assist trophy. I mean, he can do the main Bomberman thing of laying down bombs and they explode in the different patterns.
Yeah, yeah. It just would have been interesting to see him as a character. Like, that's a character, if he became a playable fighter, I would have no issue with that whatsoever. Like, I'd be really excited
Yeah, because they are having, like, a bit of a problem lately with the last two Smash games of, like, too many humanoid characters, and I really think it's kind of diluting the brand of Smash, where, you know, you just add I mean, you look at Smash 4's ads in particular, and, you know, Little Mac stands out a little bit because he's like, shorter, and but, you know, besides that, you've got, like, Palutena, Dark Pit, Lucina, Robin, like, just a lot of just dudes. Dudes and dudettes from some JRPG that you haven't played yet, and, Bomberman really, you know, breaks that up, and that's why, you know, Mega Man is like the most hype addition to that game, along with like something like Villager, even Wii Fit Trainer to a certain extent. Like, just some diversity in how these characters appear would be good, because I mean, especially you look at the Fighter Pass too, and it's just like strong anime man with saber in hand, and then there's Terry and Banjo. But yeah, I mean, it's nice to get the ARMS character. It's nice to get Steve now. But yeah, I do think that's Bomberman would have helped with that, but I digress. Speaking of humanoid characters, Travis from No More Heroes, now probably deconfirmed. He came out as the Sword Fighter Mii, and then Suda51 tweeted that this is how they were being represented in Super Smash Bros. So that's probably the extent that we're going to see him in this entry for Smash. Breaks my heart a little bit. I would have traded Joker for him. I would have traded Terry for him. I would have traded Byleth. I would have traded all three for him, honestly. But, you know, that's...
I trade all three of those characters such as it for is. A lot of characters, to be honest. Yeah,
but, like, you know, I haven't even played any No More Heroes content, but... You know, he's a fun character. He's fourth wall breaking. He's funny, and there's just not a you know, we have enough of this. I fight for my friends.
yeah. No, exactly. Yeah, he would have been a cool character, but it's like I was telling you a show or two ago. I wouldn't mind him not being a character just because there's a number of characters that I feel like are so deserving, and not to say that he isn't, but just that I feel like, you know, to me, like Crash, I feel like nobody deserves it more than him. And then Rayman is another character that's just so iconic and well deserving, and that's why I'm like, I, you know, and we might still get both of those characters. I think they're both extremely likely, but I just, to me, I'm never upset about deconfirming characters I don't really care about, because that just means that there's that many more available slots for characters I do think should be in. But I'm just really disappointed that I was hoping that Lloyd was a costume that was going to get shown. And the fact that that hasn't been Lloyd from Tales of Symphonia makes me feel like he might actually be a playable character, which I'm sorry, that would probably be the most disappointing one to me. Like almost as much as Byleth, because it's just, I mean, cause he's not even relevant. I mean, isn't Tales of Symphonia or the Tales series kind of like, it's always a different main character, sort of like Fire Emblem?
Yeah, well, it's like Fire Emblem or Final Fantasy, but much like those series, certain characters just kind of, you know, dig into the hearts of players. And for Nintendo fans, I mean, Tales of Symphonia is like the, I think one of the very few Tales games that actually made its way to a Nintendo platform after the bump up to 3D. So I think that, you know, that's probably why, is that just Tales is a big series, and Lloyd is the character that appeared in two of the games that came there. And I don't think, I mean, I might have to check my math on that, because I'm not a huge Tales fan, but I don't think we've gotten like any main Tales series, not even like ports on any Nintendo system in a long time. So that's the character that, you know, the Nintendo faithful who play Super Smash Bros. Have a relationship with. And so I'm, you know, it's kind of like Cloud, where it's like, which, you know, which Final Fantasy character would you add? The one that everyone knows. And I think that's where it comes from. Although I do not think that that's happening. I don't see it.
Well, some people have even made a good point that it would just feel kind of crummy to sit on these Mii costumes until you get to, like, the end of the second Fighter's Pass, and then you're like, all right, here you go, here, they're finally here, and, you know, and I get it, I'd be annoyed about that, too, because this whole time you'd be holding on to hope. It's the same thing with Geno, because his costume hasn't been re-released yet, and, you know, you finally get it, and just to realize that, like, oh, yeah, we just had this the whole time, we were just waiting eons to release it, which, I don't know, that would just, I mean, I get it, that would be disappointing, and it just feels like right up Sakurai's alley. He's even talked about that character in particular, and I don't know. I'm just, and a lot of people think another Namco character would get in, but I just, I'd be so disappointed, honestly, and not to disparage anybody out there listening who loves Lloyd as a character. I just think we already have so many characters like that, and you know, if
yeah,
if
like I would have taken him over
Joker, then like sure, give me Lloyd. But at this point, like no, dude.
Yeah, he should have been in line in front of those two guys. But yeah, I guess the Tales of Symphonia also performed really well in the market I'm seeing here, and that's the only Tales game I've played. So being like a mostly Nintendo fan with, you know, dipping my toes in PlayStation and Xbox here and there, that's the character that I know. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it stands to reason that Bandai Namco is helping to make the game, so they would have, you know, they'd probably get another little slot in there. But I think, especially with this Fighter's Pass, it has a lot more to do with business than, like, you know, whatever cool characters Sakurai is cooking up. You know, we went through our little theory last episode about how they decided on these people, but it seems like this time it's about business, and there's not really much of a business reason to put a Tails character in Smash unless Nintendo was like, we love you guys, you know, pick a character. And, you know, would Namco even pick that one, or would they pick someone else? Who knows? I don't think they care at all, because, I mean, the benefit with a lot of these companies is obviously the exposure and the business relationship with Nintendo, but I'm sure they're quite cozy being the developer of the best-selling fighting game of all time, and I'm sure they're getting handsomely rewarded for the effort. So I don't think it's going to happen, but we'll see. And with the whole Mii costume thing, they've been releasing a Namco costume with every new, what do they call the individual entries? A new Fighter Pass, a new, I don't know what they call them, but
just a new fighter.
Hayachi got bundled in with Min Min, and then we've got this Gil sword fighter guy with Minecraft Steve. And so I think that's probably how we're going to get it.
Oh, you're talking about, it's called Challenger Pack.
Challenger Pack, yeah. But yeah, I think that's how we're getting that. The Geno question is a little bit more interesting to me. I don't know. And that's, I mean, like, this is like, you know, 20% based on facts and, you know, the other 80 based on just like a gut feeling. But I do not see Lloyd getting in this time. He would have been a Fighter Pass 1 character because they were just really feeling that anime vibe. And I don't know. It seems like they're trying to garner a little more Western appeal this time around, too, with starting with another big, like, first-party Nintendo game and then moving on to, you know, one of the biggest Western characters of the past decade. You know, Minecraft is gigantic in the U.S. and in Europe. I don't know how it does in Japan. I assume pretty well there, too. But definitely a different vibe than, you know, Joker from the JRPG, and then Dragon Quest, the father of JRPGs, and then a strategy JRPG. It's like, man, this a lot of
well,
J's
why
in
I
there.
Just crack up when people talk about, you know, it's either Crash or Rayman, as if you could only get two platforming mascot characters in, you know, as DLC. And I'm like, we've already gotten three JRPG characters, even though I know Fire Emblem's not exactly the same, but like you said, it's a strategy JRPG, and that's why I'm just like, I don't understand why we look at those characters different. It's like all the anime sword characters from RPG games, you can add as many of them as you want, but platformers, nah, you get like one, bro. You know, I just don't get that. I'm like, why do we view it that way? It's just so strange to me.
Yeah, I mean, we've got more characters from the Japanese strategy turn-based role-playing game Fire Emblem than we've got from anywhere else in the world in any genre. And that's just kind of insane to me. But, you know, here we are. So anyway, that's coming out soon. It'll be fun. Can't wait to play Steve. I'm going to practice him, and then I'm going to abuse you when I see you.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, so next up, I want to jump into Pikmin 3 Impressions. We had a demo that dropped on the eShop today Did you get a chance to play it?
Yeah, just a little bit though, but yeah, I mean, it feels like the Wii U version. I mean, I played through most of Pikmin 3. It doesn't really feel different, although I like using the the Switch Pro controller as opposed to the Wii U gamepad, I must say. But that's just because I prefer the Pro controller to, you know, any gamepad.
Yeah, I've got a kind of an interesting history with the Pikmin series now. I mean, I guess you started playing it like a year ago. I got into it a couple weeks after they announced that they were re-releasing this one. I'm like, you know, I keep meaning to get into this game. The third one's coming out. Let me just see if I can play the first two and just see what I think. And I dipped my toe into Pikmin 1 and immediately fell in love. I don't understand why I never got back into this. I know that I got it for Christmas when I was young. And of course, being like, you know, 10 years old or however old I was at the time, I didn't understand a console real-time strategy game. And so I just kind of put it down. But when, you know, I dove back in, I love the lore, the sense of scale in the human world, the strange product placements, like you're getting Duracell batteries and sour cream caps and stuff, the weird humanoid characters like Olimar, and I love Olimar's motivations as like this employee, husband and father. They have a lot of fun with just like corporate job humor, and the Louie character from Pikmin 2, his arc is just amazing, and the storytelling that they do without too much dialogue and just like little hints here and there actually crafts a really compelling tale about Louie. And so yeah, jumping into this one, I played both of them, I'm gonna call them the Wii release versions, where they added the motion control and made them widescreen. I really loved those versions of the game. They controlled very, very, very well. And so getting into this one, especially playing without any sort of gyro or motion, I didn't really like it. The lock-on feels like a little bit... everything just kind of feels very stiff to me. And so... So I wasn't really feeling it until I found the gyro controls, and I like the gyro. It doesn't feel quite as good as those Wii releases, but you know, I'll take it. The gyro feels pretty good, and I like some of the quality of life changes they've made to how the camera works and all that stuff. But yeah, the game seems solid. The Switch port is a little weird in that you can see all the gamepad features being danced around. You know, like Alf picks up a Wii U gamepad in the game, and so much of the functionality is there, and they're just like, this is a menu now and not a Wii U gamepad. But I'm guessing, like, in the Wii U version, you were kind of like bouncing, you had your map on the bottom and you would do different commands on there and you would look at the screen on top, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I imagine you're just gonna like press pause and then make those decisions in the pause menu now. I didn't get the demo doesn't really let you get far enough to the point where you'd need to strategize with multiple captains or anything, which I bumped up against the end of the demo to unlock the extra difficulty mode, because the game's I think with the lock-on especially, it seems like it's going to be a kind of a cakewalk compared to the other two games.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the third one is much easier than the other two games because, I actually bought the third one back when it first came out on the Wii U, and I played that. And then years later, last year, I think it was, I finally played the first game, and I found it to be much, much more difficult, even frustrating at times. But the third one is much more lenient with everything that you're trying to accomplish in that. It's... it feels like you have a lot more time to do those things as well. I think it's just a much easier game in general. And then this one is co-op, so I'm sure that'll make it even easier. But the only thing I'm not sure about, and I may have missed this, but did they talk about if you can play the normal story mode co-op? I believe you can. I think I saw a video of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can. And sure. even when your captain's alone, they kind of like create a ghost clone of yourself. And so, that's cool. But, you know, speaking of the whole co-op thing, I love that idea, and I'm so glad that they added it, because going on that sort of adventure with a friend is awesome. Hey, you know, in this game where you're splitting up to do different tasks and you're teaming up and you're trading which Pikmin types you're doing, making, you know, trips back and forth to the main station that you start in is awesome. But yeah, what I am growing to really hate about the Switch experience is that they'll add stuff like split screen and co-op, but they haven't added the local multi-system multiplayer to like anything. And I know it's possible because they have it on Mario Maker, they have it on Mario Tennis Aces, but this would have been the perfect game to just let us have, you know, we can sit in like a living room with our two Switches and be able to work together on Pikmin with both having our own screen, because this is not the type of game where you can like cut your screen in half and still have like the best experience. You need that real estate just to see what monsters are around the corner or what treasure is sitting in a weird perch at the corner of your screen. And so I do not like the split screen aspect, and it's kind of sucking the fun out of the Hyrule Warriors game that's coming out too, where I wish they'd get back to that. I mean, that's part of what sold Game Boys and DSs and 3DSs, is that you would encourage people to pick up extra systems and extra copies of games, because we wanted to trade Pokemon, we wanted to team up in Kirby and the Amazing Mirror, we wanted to do Triforce Heroes at the same time. And yeah, I just wish the Switch would start getting the support more often.
Oh yeah, most definitely. I mean, it's just odd because, not odd, but almost just frustrating, because not everybody wants to play split screen. I mean, I will say I appreciate that it's even an option, because it's still better than nothing. But yeah, I mean, you think you would just take advantage of the local multiplayer aspect. It's kind of like when you play games like Mario Kart or Mario Tennis Aces, you can just connect your Switches and both use your own screens. And I don't really understand why that's not an option. Like, it just seems like it makes too much sense to not be a thing.
Yeah, which it would be extra development time to figure out how to make that work, but it'd be worth it, because instead of buying Pikmin once and playing it split screen, we would be like playing Pikmin with two different copies, and we'd be spending twice as much money to play it. And like, we can't be the only people who are interested in taking that experience to the next level. And I think that's where a lot of PlayStation games and such have basically created online lobbies as their new split screen, because it's hard, you know, it's hard to make split screen work, but it's easier to just like create an online infrastructure where you can, you know, run the game with people doing that. And online play would have been awesome too, but maybe in Pikmin 4, we'll see. But you know, all that being said, I love Pikmin. They brought back the short films that they used to have on the 3DS and sell for $5 on this weird like movie channel, but I'm excited to play the game. I love the world of Pikmin, and you know, I'm just in a toss up where like I don't know if I want to play through this game with you or not. I want to, but I also want to be able to see the screen, and so it's just, I don't know, it's this conflict that I shouldn't be having.
Right. Yeah. No. Anyway, I totally feel the same way.
Class action lawsuits heat up as Nintendo's legal representation makes its case. So there's been a lot of class action lawsuits with the Joy-Con drift problem. Nintendo has admitted that it is a problem inside of investor briefings, but besides kind of quietly creating a policy where they're going to cover those repairs and refund some people who already paid for them, they have been also fighting this little legal war on the side with, you know, a bunch of different suits that are coming out. There is another one that was filed this week, a boy and his mother, $5 million in damages with the class action lawsuits. And yeah, I gotta say, like, I feel like people are making this out to be a little more of a scandal than it is. I mean, the quote that got everybody fired up was that the law firm was arguing that this hasn't been an inconvenience to anybody, which we all know is false. Nintendo knows is false. The lawyers know is false. But they're going to try and make the case anyway, because this is how the weird business legal system works, and they're trying to save Nintendo some money. I hate the way this is being handled. where depending on the region and the day of the week, Nintendo will either pretend like it isn't a problem or they'll quietly offer a free repair. It's just really inconsistent and strange, but you know, a lot of the business arbitration gets sort of ridiculous in this sphere. You know, like I've been a part of like the occasional class action lawsuit, and it usually comes as like, hey, you might be interested in filing, help us make our case, and we could give you $10 if we win or if we settle. And you know, that's there's only like two, there's usually three winners in all these situations. The company gets to just like settle with whoever's creating a ruckus. The lawyer, the law firm gets a big payday, and the first two or three people who file to get a big payday. Everyone else loses because everything takes forever and nothing really changes. So, hooray, Joy-Con drift.
Yeah, it's well, I mean, I don't even know what to say about it at this point. I mean, just the argument from Nintendo's standpoint is just it's just almost offensive, you know, that they would try to make the argument that it really doesn't bother anyone or hasn't inconvenienced anybody when it's been a huge problem. I saw a viral video go up on it where somebody was just responding to Nintendo's response, and they pulled up a the calendar within the Switch menu and just had their Joy-Cons connected and let it go, and it was just scrolling through all the months on its own. And it's like the Joy-Cons just don't work, and almost everyone's Joy-Cons have problems at some point. And just to make the argument that it doesn't really matter, when this is one of my biggest gripes with Nintendo, is the fact that they don't include a traditional controller with the system. That just really, really bugs me. I've said it since the Wii, that it's just, why do they only include the, like, almost gimmicky controller, you know, and not the, like, traditional controller? And that's fine with the Switch. I think the Joy-Cons work great with the Joy-Con grip. But the problem is because of all the issues that they end up having, it's like, nobody would really care, and you could probably make the argument that it's not a big inconvenience if the Switch came with a Pro controller. But instead, they make you buy that for, you know, $70, which, it's really annoying. And honestly, I think Nintendo's made a lot of scummy moves this year, you know, just with, you know, the thing they did with Pikmin 3 and Super Mario 3D All-Stars, and now you have this, and it's just like, you just wonder at Nintendo, like, do they really care about the consumers? Which I know every business essentially is kind of anti-consumer when you really think about it. They're acting in the best interest of the business, but I just think it's really, you know, as somebody who's supported them for years and years and years, like, I find that to be really almost asinine, you know?
Yeah, and there's another lawsuit coming out in Paris that's accusing Nintendo of creating a product designed to break. And this is where it gets dumb on the other side, too, is that there's money to be made whenever one of these things happens. And instead of, like, you know, everybody being an adult and being like, this is a problem, you need to fix it and reimburse everybody for their trouble and do it in a timely manner, it creates this impetus on people to, you know, try and squeeze more juice out of it, creating a product designed to break. Like, what do you think, that they have this big plan where they're like, hey, we're going to make people call our repair centers, and they're going to send their Joy-Cons for us, and we're going to cover the shipping, and we're going to repair it, and we're going to make $20 per Joy-Con that we repair, and we're going to do it to everybody, like, once a year. It's like, they're not doing that. But if you start out with that lawsuit, then you can settle down at some point. And yeah, everybody's just looking for a payout here, and Nintendo's looking to avoid the responsibility. And it kind of ties their hands, too, where they might want to create different programs or make more of a statement. But, you know, while they're in these lawsuits, everything that they say publicly about the Joy-Con is going to be held against them in a literal court of law. And that's, you know, that's the tough part about it. But yeah, it's just going to go on for years, and there's going to be some settlement, and, you know, a bunch of people are going to get, you know, $13 in the mail, and life will go on. Until then, just, you know, I just have to, like, budget getting a new pair of Joy-Cons every year. And you can send them to Nintendo to get them repaired. It just, like, you know, during the whole pandemic yada yada stuff, I know we mentioned this, you know, every episode, but that's just kind of life right now. It took months for them to open the repair systems back up, and then you send it there, and it takes, you know, at least like 2 weeks to just get it through the mail, and then you have to find like a box that fits the things. And, you know, it's a lot of hassle. And so I just keep two pairs of Joy-Cons, and so that way I can cycle one out, and it's dumb, and I shouldn't have to do it, but, you know, that's just what you got to do.
Well, that's why I don't.
It's what
even,
you got to do.
That's why I don't even play with the Joy-Cons. Honestly, I just gave up on it. I mean, and the nice thing is that the Switch Pro Controller is an amazing controller, so that helps because I don't really ever have a desire to use the Joy-Cons, and then I've got my GameCube controller for Super Smash Bros. But yeah, it's just, I mean, to me, in the Joy-Con, it's a wonderful controller. You know, it's very sophisticated, but I just think if you're going to put out a product that doesn't work, you should at least be able to be held accountable for that, and to just essentially say, well, I mean, it's a problem, but it hasn't ruined anybody's life. I just think that's such an ignorant statement on their part, and I don't know, I feel like they should honestly be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah, because, I mean, honestly, like, you know, one of the most recent lawsuits was filed by a mom filing it for her son who's like under the age of 10, and like those are the people that are getting hurt by this. You know, they like, parents don't have $80 more to just chuck at a new controller, and repairing it is time consuming, and they might not understand the repair process for games hardware, and you know, the kids might not even know that it's happening. They might think it's a glitch in the game or something like that, but it's just rough. And there's always those people who come in the comments and they're like, I just use the Pro Controller. And it's like, yeah, that works great in the portable setting. You know, let me just create a mount to tape my Pro Controller onto my Switch so that I can play with it portably. It's just, you know, the system was designed around the Joy-Con, and the Joy-Con are awesome. They are fantastic little devices. I think they're just absolutely incredible. I mean, I gotta say, like, I've started getting my 2 and 4 year old into Mario Kart, and being able to let them play with the Joy-Cons and use them kind of as a steering wheel is awesome. I got two little plastic things that we're gonna pop them into so they can actually like feel like they're wheels. It's so cool that they do that. The HD Rumble is a nice little parlor trick you can use to kill time at the Thanksgiving dinner table, and you know, I love the split D-pad on it, and it just gives a different kind of experience. So I prefer the split Joy-Con for games like Pikmin. Absolutely, I'm going to be using the gyro pointer, kind of replicating a Wii Remote nunchuck experience for that game. Whereas other games like Mario Kart, I prefer the Pro Controller, and you know, games like Smash, I'm hitting up the GameCube. It's nice to have those options, and but like there's a lot of people who just like you know, they only have so much money that they can spend on a birthday or a holiday, and they don't want to have to think about like buying another controller. Or buying a different controller, they want to buy a new game. You know, that's why they bought a game system. And so, I just hope somewhere in all this mess that they actually come up with some sort of solution before, you know, too long. But it's already been how many years? 4 years? 3 years since the Switch came out? So I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, same here. And just yeah, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's Nintendo, and I don't really feel like they care, to be honest. They kind of just want this problem to go away, and they'll probably, like you said, have some sort of settlement, and it'll just feed into a footnote. But yeah, it's just disappointing because you would just, like I said, I mean, just taking accountability in this instance would be really admirable, but at the end of the day, they're a business, so they're going to operate in the best interest of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like this is the sort of thing that, like, I would have wanted to see, like, Iwata deal with. I feel like he might have navigated this little situation a little bit better, but I don't know. I mean, you know, the current president has apologized for it. He's saying that they're trying to improve it, but he can't comment on the Joy-Con specifically because of the class action lawsuits in the U.S. So we'll see where it goes. Probably nowhere. Super Nintendo World is set to open in Universal Studios Japan in spring of 2021. This comes after a delay to no one's surprise, although there is a cafe and a store that'll be opening within the next couple weeks. If you are in Japan in the area and you want some Mario-themed cafe snacks.
Yeah, sorry, I thought you were still talking. That's why I just didn't say anything, but it looks neat enough. It's funny because a lot of people saw the concepts for those, and I saw a lot of comments saying they were pretty disappointed or that it looked a little dull, which I can understand, but I don't know. At the end of the day, like, I think these theme parks are never exactly the way you imagine them being in your head. I mean, it's kind of like the Harry Potter world at Universal Studios, which is really well done, by the way. But I mean, you go there and it's supposed to give you this wintertime theme, but it's you know, it's Orlando in Florida, so it's like 1,200 degrees out. So, you know, there's always going to be things they don't really get perfect. And like, I know the cafe, that's what people were kind of talking about, looked disappointing. But I'm like, I mean, is there any cafe in a Mario game that you could perfectly replicate? I mean,
Paper Mario, the Origami King.
Yeah, well, maybe that. I wouldn't know.
But they wouldn't do that. It's like, it's too niche. But yeah, I get what you're saying. The way they adapt these brands for the wider market is always like a little sanitary. You know, I just bought... somehow my kids have discovered, independent of me, who Sonic is, and they say things like, I'm fast like Sonic. And so I got my son a little Sonic toy, and they use Green Hill Zone as like the main toy. And it's like, hasn't really been relevant in the Sonic series for a very long time, although they keep bringing it back as like a nostalgia, little nostalgia kick. And, but yeah, at this point, it doesn't really have much relevance, but yeah, they do the same thing with Mario. Mario is either New Super Mario Bros., 3D World, or the original, and every game in between just didn't exist.
Yeah, exactly.
For all these little like multimedia things, it's really kind of funny. So I don't know, it's cool. This actually isn't all that special for Japan. Like, Japan has Resident Evil themed restaurants and Pokemon cafes, so they already have a lot of this stuff, but now they'll have a Mario one, so good for them. I really want to go to the Pokemon themed one, but I don't live anywhere near Japan.
I'm just,
so
I'm just waiting for them to build the Donkey Kong part of the Super Nintendo World, which I don't know if that's going to be a US only thing, but they've showed the concept art for that before, and that's something I'm really excited to see. So you know, we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, I hope they end up diversifying more with other franchises like DK, because, you know, so far Super Nintendo World is just Super Mario World. And I don't know.
Yeah, and then why wouldn't you just call it Super Mario? Like, I guess Super Mario World doesn't work, but just like call it Mario Land or something inside of Universal. Like, the Nintendo name right now doesn't make any sense. You know, like, Until at least Donkey Kong shows up, then it's just Mario, Mario. Specifically, New Super Mario Bros. In 3D World.
Right.
Something tells me we're not going to see any Paper Mario there, nor any, like, you know, sports Mario. We'll probably see Mario Kart, but, like, you know, besides that stuff. Anyway, it'll be cool to see, and I do want to eventually go there. It's fun that we're getting, you know, some sort of video game theme park. Mortal Kombat 11 Ultimate Edition has been announced for the Nintendo Switch, which includes the Combat Pack 2 and the Combat Pack 1. And
did you see Rambo?
I don't like Mortal Kombat at all.
Rambo's going to be a character.
Yeah, that's I think it's cool that they're mixing in these multimedia characters, though. I've never seen Rambo. I don't have any attachment to that, nor much attachment to the Terminator. I have no interest in Mortal Kombat. I always found the emphasis on gore to be a bit of a turnoff. It's just kind of like distracting and silly to me. Though I get the appeal that the series has. I mean, it's like this weird mix of comically stupid takedown moves that just have the immense blood and gore effects, and so I get why people like it, but it's not for me.
Yeah, well, I just think it's funny that Sylvester Stallone is in a video game now.
I always liked Mortal Kombat.
It looks like they're trying to make the Rambo not look like him, which has got to be weird, because, you know, back then with those older movies, they weren't talking about video game deals and your likeness being used inside of a video game, because, like, how would they even have pulled that off? But nowadays, it's actually kind of complicated. You know, it's like the Avengers game where they make them, like, sort of look like the actors, but not enough to, you know, cause any trouble. And, I don't think he looks like Stallone, but I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I haven't seen the movie, so.
Yeah, I've seen some of the Rambo
actually
movies.
No.
I mean, I think he looks enough like him, but, you know, just a video game version.
My main takeaway is that I am, I'm very flattered that they use the letter K to spell combat for the combat pack.
Yeah, it's like King K. Rool, like, named it.
Yeah. I like that piece, but, you know, I think Trevor has it on his PlayStation or something. I could give it a whirl at some point, but I mean, fighting games are so hard to get into, especially the ones that like have this long storied history and you don't know the combos and all that stuff. So I will probably never get around to that, to be honest. But a game that we will get around to is Hyrule Warriors, the War of Calamity. I think that's what it's called. I always forget the name of this one. I always shorthand it to, like, Breath of the Wild Dynasty Warriors, which, you know, that's what it is. So they had the Treehouse Live where they showed a little bit of Pikmin 3 off. We know what Pikmin 3 is, like, you know, nothing surprising there. Hyrule Warriors, also nothing surprising there. I was surprised that there was a small staircase and a small empty building that you could go inside of, but everything else looks pretty par for the course. You walk in a straight line. There's a bunch of enemies that don't do anything for you, or don't do anything to you, and you just you mash a button and watch them swirl around like bubbles in a bathtub. And then there's one enemy that's like a slightly bigger or a different colored version of those small enemies that you're hitting. And he has like a little circle bar, and you deplete the circle bar, and then your character does a fun animation, and then they instantly get destroyed. And then you just kind of, you know, rinse and repeat between destroy this base or take this base or hold this base or get to this part. And it's just exactly what I expected. It looks like, I mean, they stopped on kind of a cliffhanger where a big boss monster sort of thing showed up, but I also wasn't incredibly impressed with the Hyrule Warriors bosses. They were definitely a lot of fun the first time, but as is with many Dynasty Warriors pieces of what makes those games, they just recycle and reuse, and by the 400th time I was, you know, cutting the toes of the imprisoned, I just ate my Wii U gamepad and called it a day when I was playing the original. So, you know, they're fun enough. I think we'll find some way of playing it together. It's another one of those situations where I'd almost rather, like, just pass the controller around with you guys to play it rather than do split screen. Because it's gonna like make the game chug and you know, cut our view in half, but you know, it's Zelda. It's I like Zelda enough, so I'm gonna play it and give it a shot. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, you pretty much summed it up. To be totally honest, I think it looks exactly like the first one, aside from a couple of different things. It looks like the rune abilities are incorporated, if I'm not mistaken. Like, I saw them using the time freezing one on a Hinox, which I thought that was pretty cool. But other than that, I mean, it's exactly what I expected. And I feel like it's a little underwhelming in that sense, because I thought they'd do, you know, especially because the team that develops Zelda is so closely associated with this one. I think they're, like, helping out in a lot of ways. And so I thought they would have added more depth to it. But it, yeah, I mean, it's just what I expected. So if I'm being completely honest, I'm not totally excited to play it. But I'm sure I'll get around to it at some point.
Yeah, and I don't know if, like, something's just wrong with me. But, like, Even the concept, you know, at first I was like, oh, of course this is perfect, because we get to see how that war played out. But you know, from a story standpoint, like, Link slashing up 6,000 enemies with no trouble without even having the Master Sword, it just really breaks the whole theming apart. That's not how it went. You know, it's just that's and I don't know. I just wish they would really, like, this could have been the game where they really shook up the Dynasty Warriors formula and maybe, like, you know, reduced the amount of enemies and made the enemy encounters more impactful. Because I swear, like, in those games, you can rush into a mob of 300 enemies and do nothing. And if you did nothing with your controller, it would probably take them a solid 6 minutes to take you out, of you just standing there. And so, it's all just kind of window dressing, and you just mash the buttons and see a bunch of, you know, corpses fly every which way. And I don't know, it just feels really cheap to me. And the mechanics of, like, capturing bases and reaching certain points and sending different characters to do different tasks is cool, and I like those aspects. But you just, man, you get through one of those stages and you've played the whole game. You know, the outside of, like, a few curveball bosses, but most of the bosses are just, like, you know, you wait for them to do the attack, the circle appears, then you attack them to try and deflate the circle, and once the circle's deflated, then you do your cool animation attack, half their HP bar disappears, and, you know, you rinse and repeat. And that's just, I don't know, man, it's an effective strategy for them to just, like, I mean, they basically just take in an IP and give it the Dynasty Warriors treatment. They don't, like, the games are all kind of the same, and so it's just, it's a cool, like, fan service-y idea, but yeah, I mean, given that it's already happened once, my expectations are not very high for this game, and that leads us to this focus on the story that they have. Which, you know, it's like a cool thing. You get to see what happened during the major time skip in the Breath of the Wild story. But I have a theory based on, like, the story trailer and hearing some of the voice acting and the dialogue that part's not really going to deliver, especially because we know all the plot twists. There's nothing in this game that's, I think, really going to surprise us. I don't know. Are you into that angle, the story angle?
I always thought it'd be a cool concept, but I'm with you. I feel like it's going to under-deliver in that tremendously. I think if anybody's expecting to get this riveting storyline from the game, all the stuff that happened in the 100 years, you're not going to get it. So, yeah, I completely and wholeheartedly agree with that.
Yeah, and I've always felt like Zelda games were much better at world building than storytelling. You know, Breath of the Wild doesn't have an incredibly compelling plot, but the way in which you uncover that story is really cool, especially looking at it from the standpoint of it being a video game, where most video games these days just kind of sit you down in a roller coaster ride and they show you stuff that you do in a straight line. Which is cool and it has its own merits, but not exactly what I'm usually looking for in a game. Breath of the Wild, you would discover different pieces that were, you know, these shards of your memories that you're reclaiming in, you know, any which order that you find them. I really loved that quest in Breath of the Wild to find your memories. That being said, like, I think that's where most of the substance was, that what was happening in the story was just kind of cliche anime action movie stuff and not really anything that's, like, groundbreaking. I mean, there's not much character development for any of the characters. They're just like, I'm the cool one who doesn't like you at first. And then there's, like, I'm the girl who's in love with you for no reason. And it's like, I'm not even naming names here, and you know, like, exactly what I am. Tough woman who could beat you up.
Yeah,
I am jolly big guy with big belly and muscles. Like, I'm just like, dude, I could name, like, 15 anime characters that these are direct parallels of. And so, like, the champions that I don't feel like have really ever stood up, and I can't stand Zelda's fake English accent. Like, where was this rule written that if you were going to do anything, like, that has swords in it, that the people have to be speaking English? like the old English, the English accent. I just don't get it. And so the Zelda and Link dynamic was interesting because there's actually some character development there. There's actually some big shakeups in how they view the world and what they do in that. And Zelda's journey is kind of interesting, but we already know what's going to happen there. So I don't really see what's going to be that compelling about the story here. I think it's going to be a little bit of a letdown, but everybody will be impressed anyway because it has the Master Sword and the Ganon and the Zelda. Oh, I sound like a lot more negative than I intend to be. Like I loved Breath of the Wild. I spent a ton of time in that game, but the plot and the voice acting and Nintendo's first crack at telling a narrative in a Zelda game was like a little stale. If you were just to watch the cutscenes back to back, you'd be like, oh, well, this is, I guess we'll go with this. Zelda, you need to get the thing and claim your power.
You need to save my daughter.
Yeah. the Princess of England. Like, I don't get that at all, man. It's the weirdest thing. And I see it all the time in these movies where it's just like, if it's about wizards or swordsmen, it has to be in the old English accent. But only some of the characters, like, you know, the bird guy does not, you know, the edgy birds usually have more of a New York accent. I don't know, man. I just, I'm excited to play the game, but, you know, only to the extent that it's just like, it's just new, and we'll get to see a little more of the Breath of the Wild world. I love the aesthetic Breath of the Wild. I love the game getting a little more of that. And this is a really cool way to really spread out the offering of what you've got in a franchise, is to, you know, have someone do a small little spin-off game like this. And, you know, that's what I look at it. I mean, it's going to be the fact that the Breath of the Wild in this game will be the same price is kind of funny to me, but it's, you know, removing the whole price conversation out of it. It's just it's a fun little diversion. There's nothing left to say except that Pikmin 3 is going to be awesome. That series is cool. I swear I don't hate this Hyrule Warriors game before I'm playing it. I'm just not impressed thus far, and but I hope to have my socks knocked right off of me, knocked clean off of me, and yeah. So I mean, it'll be a pretty interesting little holiday. We got some Smash and Pokemon DLC. We got some Dynasty Warriors and some Pikmin. A lot of re-release content, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing that I'm too excited about, but hopefully we'll get one more surprise announcement or two.
Yeah, that's what's kind of interesting, is that Mario came a little too early for it to be the big holiday game, and it's already started to fall in its position in the sales charts, so I wonder if there is something up their sleeve. I guess not at this point. I think that game was probably supposed to be 3D Land Deluxe, and this was just supposed to be the year of the port, but I don't know, which is like, that's the weird part. I feel like we're being maybe too hard on Nintendo during these podcasts, but I'm just kind of calling it as I see it. I have no ill will toward any of this stuff. It's kind of weird to see it all happening.
Yeah. I mean, we're just being honest. So, I mean, the truth never hurts.
Yeah, but all right, we'll be back in your feed next week with a little bit of Steve impressions, and then I think whatever else happens during the week, who knows, anything could happen, but probably not much more than that. So we'll see you then as our We the People series continues.